Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 9, text 48. Tataha. I'm going to do something different today. Not that different, but a little different. I'm going to do the word for word, and then we're going to chant the Sanskrit. Because that way, when you're chanting the Sanskrit, you hopefully have some better understanding of what we're chanting. Tataha. Thereafter. Yudhishthira. Maharaj Yudhishthir. Gatva. There. Saha. With. Krishna. The Lord. Gajavayam. In the capital name, Gajavaya, Hastinapur. Pitaram. Unto his uncle. Dhritarashtra. Santavyam. Sorry, Santvayam. Asha. Consoled. Gandharim. The wife of Dhritarashtra. Cha. And Tapasvinam, an ascetic lady. Okay. Tato Yudhishthiro Gatva. Tato Yudhishthiro Gatva. Saha Krishna Gajavayam. Saha Krishna Gajavayam. Pitaram Santvayam Asha. Pitaram Santvayam Asha. Gandharim Cha Tapashvinam. Gandharim Cha Tapashvinam. Tato Yudhishthiro Gatva. Saha Krishna Gajavayam. Pitaram Santvayam Asha. Gandharim Cha Tapashvinim. Others. Tato Yudhishthiro Gatva.
Yeah.
Vaishnavis. Translation. Thereafter, Maharaj Yudhisthira at once went to his capital, Hastinapur, accompanied by Lord Sri Krishna, and there he consoled his uncle and aunt Gandhari, who was an ascetic. Purport. Actually, before we go on, does everybody know what an ascetic is? Just in case you don't. An ascetic is a person who practices severe self-discipline and abstention from all forms of indulgence, typically for religious reasons. So, in case you didn't know, now you do. Okay, so, purport. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, the father and mother of Duryodhana and his brothers, were the elder uncle and aunt of Maharaj Yudhisthira. After the Battle of Kurukshetra, the celebrated couple, having lost all their sons and grandsons, were under the care of Maharaj Yudhisthira. They were passing their days in great agony over such a heavy loss of life and were practically living the life of ascetics. The death news of Bhishmadev, uncle of Dhritarashtra, was another great shock for the king and the queen, and therefore they required solace from Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira was conscious of his duty, and he at once hurried to the spot with Lord Krishna and satisfied the bereaved Dhritarashtra with kind words from both himself and the Lord also. Gandhari was a powerful ascetic, although she was living the life of a faithful wife and a kind mother. It is said that Gandhari also voluntarily closed her eyes because of the blindness of her husband. A wife's duty is to follow the husband's scent percent. And Gandhari was so true to her husband that she followed him even in his perpetual blindness. Therefore, in her actions, she was a great ascetic. Besides that, the shock she suffered because of the wholesale killing of her 100 sons and her grandsons was also certainly too much for a woman. But she suffered all this just like an ascetic. Gandhari, although a woman, is no less than Bhishmadev in character. They are both remarkable personalities in the Mahabharata. So, Prabhupada's saying here in this purport about how Gandhari is a woman, but he's saying no less than Bhishmadev in character. And final comment is they're both remarkable personalities in the Mahabharata. So we've been hearing probably for about the last month now, I guess, or a few weeks anyway, about Bhishmadev. So since Prabhupada has said that Gandhari is no less than Bhishmadev in character, and today's verse is kind of about her. I mean, one of the two paragraphs of the purport is dedicated to her, and she's mentioned in the translation, and the purport will try to maybe say a little something about her. So Gandhari is the younger sister of Shakuni. Gandhar is Afghanistan. That was the part of the world that her father was ruling. And she was famous for being, Prabhupada says actually in one place in the Bhagavatam, that she was the most beautiful woman of her time. Most beautiful woman of her time. And as a young girl, she worshipped Lord Shiva. She wanted a benediction. She wanted 100 sons. And she actually got that benediction from Lord Shiva. Somehow or another, it was arranged that she married Dhritarashtra. And she didn't flinch. No, Dhritarashtra was, as we all know, blind from birth. And when she found out that that was who she was arranged to marry, she accepted that. And as mentioned here in today's purport, she voluntarily closed her eyes and blindfolded herself because she didn't want to feel superior to her husband. You know, as my husband can't see, but I can see, so I'm... No. So if my husband can't see, then I can't see. So that was a voluntary austerity she accepted. And she had many other good qualities. But Prabhupada mentions that, and she was also renowned for that. You know, she was, it wasn't that she was just beautiful. She was understood to be somebody who's very cultured, etc. But she was... She, like Prabhupada says in the in another purport, that she had this competitive nature. Both her and Kunti, Queen Kunti, were pregnant at the same time. And he doesn't specifically state the reason, but if there was any... Anyway, she wanted to give birth first, you know. But Kunti gave birth first to Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira is older than Duryodhana. And that was really... A cause of angst for her. She, you know, was very unhappy about that. That my rival, my competitor, is giving birth first to a male child, maybe, you know, eclipsing the importance of my son, who will be to be born. So anyway, so she was at that time she was pregnant, and she struck her abdomen. You know, she gave a blow to her abdomen out of frustration. And what happened was, she gave birth to a lump. A lump, you know, came out, and not alive. But then that lump was divided into 100 pieces, and each one of those pieces came to be developed into a living male child. So the benediction was fulfilled. She had 100 male sons, the oldest of whom was, of course, Duryodhana, and I believe the second oldest was Dushasan. And now, interesting, this is a very important point, too. She wasn't in favor of the war. She was not in favor of the war. And she actually blamed her husband. Her opinion was that she acknowledged the right of the Pandavas to have some kingdom. And she was in favor of that. Okay, it should be divided into two parts. One for the Pandavas and one for my sons. That's the fair way to do it. But, you know, that wasn't what was going on. But that was her stance on the whole thing. Okay? And that's significant. I'll get back to that in a second, or in a minute. When her sons were all killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra, she was very much affected by that, tremendously. You know, all 100 sons killed, and she was ready to curse both Yudhishthira and Bhima, but Vyasadeva preached to her and talked her out of it, and she was submissive. So she was control, you know. She was submissive to Vyasadeva. That's to her great credit. And Vyasadeva, at some later point, actually let her see how her sons were promoted to the heavenly planets. Now, and of course, she passed away with her husband in the Himalayan mountains in some jungle forest fire. That's how she met her end. But the most famous story, probably, in connection with Gandhari, is the story about how she wanted to protect her eldest son, Duryodhana. See? So in other words, like her husband, Dhritarashtra, who in other places is also mentioned as realizing he was doing the wrong thing. She was aware. You know, as I just mentioned, she wanted that the kingdom be divided between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. So she realized that was the fair and the right thing to do. But despite that, she was a mother. She was, and that was her oldest son. and she wanted to protect him. So she devised a scheme. Prabhupada explains that by accepting that vow of voluntary blindness, she acquired power. And Prabhupada says anybody who follows some regulative principle like that acquires some power. So anyway, you know, austerity translates into power at some point. So anyway, so she understood that she had some power, and her idea was that, okay, I'm going to use the results of all my austerities to benedict my son in such a way that he will be invulnerable, and therefore he won't be able to be killed. You know, that's what she's mostly concerned about. I don't want my son to be killed. So she, without revealing the details to him, what was exactly going to happen and how it was going to work, she called her son and she told her son, Duryodhana, I want you to come here tomorrow at this time completely naked. Completely naked. And Duryodhana, okay, yeah, you know, the next day he was in the palace and he was in the process of going to where his mother was, and he was completely naked as she instructed him. And Krishna bumped into Krishna. Just coincidentally, not exactly coincidentally, but he bumped into Krishna, and Krishna said, Duryodhana, what's going on? You know, because in Vedic culture, you don't walk around naked. I mean, even now, even in this, now, people, you're not supposed, you don't walk around naked. You get arrested. What to speak of then? I mean, you aren't even supposed to see yourself naked. In Vedic culture, you don't even see yourself naked. You're wearing a gumsha. You know, even when you, at least this is what brahmacharis are taught, when you bathe, you're always wearing something. You know, you're wearing a gumsha, and then you just take that gumsha off and put the dry gumsha like that. So it's really, you know, it's really outrageous. So Krishna saw that, and he said, what are you doing? And he said, you know, he realized how unusual it was. So he said, my mother has told me to come to where she is, and she specifically instructed me I should be completely naked. And he said, yeah, well, I mean, you know, okay, fair enough, but come on, you got to put a gumsha on at least, you know, put some, you know, something, kopan on, kopan. So he, okay. Langota, I think, is the word, right? Langota? Just something that would cover his, you know, his loins there. So he also felt like, because she didn't explain it to him. She didn't explain to him what she was going to do, you see? So, or at least, even if, I don't actually, be honest with you, I'm not completely 100% sure on that detail, if it was explained to him previously or not. But in any event, Krishna was able to convince him to put on that langota, and he did. So then he appeared, you know, there before his mother, and his mother said, okay, he said, mother, I'm here. And she said, okay, very good. And then she, you know, whatever she did, and she unblindfolded herself, and she looked at his body, you know, from head to toe, like, you know, some rays, you know, and every part of the body that was naked became like iron, became invulnerable, right? But then after she did that, you know, after she'd already unblindfolded herself and did that, she realized, wait a second, you're wearing this garment there. What are you doing? And he said, well, you know, he explained that I was going through the palace halls and I bumped into Krishna, and he said, you can't go before your mother like that. You got to put something on. That sounded reasonable to me, more than reasonable, so I did. She said, oh, no. She realized, Krishna has foiled me. You know, Krishna has foiled, you know, she had that desire to protect her son, but then she realized, no, it's Krishna. Krishna has outsmarted me. And so what is, this very important lesson to be learned from this pastime. We'd like to take a shot at it. Is any uninitiated devotee would like to say, what is the lesson to be learned from this pastime, this particular incident? What? Yeah, Georgie? Woo! Let's have a big round of applause for this bhakta. Wow. That's exactly right. Do you know the Sanskrit? Okay. Does any other uninitiated devotee know the Sanskrit for that one? How about first initiated devotee? If Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, nobody can kill you. Okay. Jai Jai. Yeah, that's right. Rakhe Krishna Madhike, Madhe Krishna. Was it the same? Madhe Krishna. Rakhe Krishna Madhike, Madhe Krishna. If Krishna wants to kill you, nobody. If Krishna wants to protect you, nobody can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. In other words, the purpose of Krishna will be, cannot be frustrated. You know? So, and she realized that. She had her plan, but then Krishna had his plan. And Krishna's plan came out, emerged victorious. So, there's an important lesson there for us there. That even in our own attempts to become Krishna conscious, no, there's a certain way in which we've been told, you know, to perform, be devotees and perform devotional service in order to be successful, which involves things like, of course, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles. I just heard maybe yesterday on a lecture, Prabhupada said, his lecture he gave in Vrindavan, he's lecturing on the nectar of devotion, and he was talking about how devotional service begins, everything begins with Mangal Arati. He said, you got to get up early. He said, you have to rise early, and you have to come to Mangal Arati. You know, he just, it's like it was an absolute must if you want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, like that. Or the other things, you know, and then trying to not only become Krishna conscious, but try to participate in the spreading of Krishna consciousness, cooperate, help in some way or another, if not being a frontline soldier, being somebody who's supporting the effort. So that's the program we've been given to become Krishna conscious. And but, you know, if we're thinking, like Gandhari was thinking, that, oh, I got some other idea, then, you know, we might find out, like Gandhari found out, that doesn't work. See, so, you know, Rakhe Krishna Madhike, Madhe Krishna Rakhe. If Krishna wants us to be perform devotional service in a certain way in order to be successful, then that's what we got to do. And if we're not going to surrender to that, okay, well, that's, everybody's got that free choice, but we might find that we don't come up with the result that we're hoping for. So that's an important thing to meditate on. That, you know, once again, Krishna's will cannot be frustrated. The way Krishna wants things to happen, that's the way it's got to happen. And you got to cooperate with that. So that's an important point for that, you know, in that pastime. So I wanted to also speak a little bit about Dwarkadish Prabhu, to say a little something. For those of you, most of us, well, I don't know, there's a lot of new devotees here, but many of us know who Dwarkadish is. For those of you who don't, that's his picture there. He's a photo on the base of Prabhupada's Vyasasan is Dwarkadish. And he was a long-standing member of this community. He was active in this community for at least, what, Brinjanath, 35 years? I believe it's since like the early 80s, about 83 or something like that. But he started his Krishna consciousness before that. About a year ago or so, I was able to, you know, I was friends with him. I mean, he was a tax preparer, or he had, you know, he worked for Jackson Hewitt tax accountancy, and so he prepared my taxes, and so I got to know him a bit. And one occasion I asked him about how he became a devotee and like that. So he explained to me that his father was a merchant, had some sort of store, maybe I think it was a jewelry store in Bombay. And devotees came to try to make him a life member. Actually, specifically, he mentioned it was Sridhar Maharaj, the late Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada disciple Sridhar Maharaj, who came to, you know, try to get his father to become a life member. And his father wasn't, his father did. You know, he became a member, but he wasn't interested in the whole thing. He just, yeah, sure, here you go, here's the whatever, the payment. But Dwarkadish was interested. You know, and he asked a lot of questions to Sridhar Maharaj. Sridhar Maharaj preached to him, gave him books, and he read the books, and he really liked him. This is when he was a very young college student. I can't remember. He told me, you know, it's been a year, 20 years old, plus or minus, at that point. And so he became inspired. And from that point onwards, he became interested in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, for the rest of his schooling, he was practicing Krishna consciousness, and he came here. He was active out in Placentia. They had some sort of preaching center out there, and he was active with that. And so, you know, pretty much from the time he was about, say, 20 years old, he's was approximately the same age as me, 67, like that. He was practicing Krishna consciousness for the last, say, 45 plus years of his life. So he's been practicing for a while, and he's, you know, a serious person about whatever he did. He was successful, very, very successful material, and he was a very serious devotee as well. So, I received an email or a text message from his daughter yesterday, and it's an email they were going to send to the devotees, which they may have already done, but probably not everybody is on their email mailing list, so I'll read it because it's very well written and obviously very relevant. So it's from the family, actually. It says, "Dear devotees, Hare Krishna, please accept our humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Thank you for all the heartfelt prayers, phone calls, emails, texts, etc. We are overwhelmed by your love and support. On his way home from work on Friday, Dwarkadish Das was in a car accident. All we know is that he had severe head injury and trauma to the brain. The doctors had to perform emergency surgery. After the surgery, they said his brain function was at 1%, and there was no hope for recovery. So, with a heavy heart and the blessings of our Guru Maharaj, His Holiness Bhakti Churu Swami, we decided to take him off of life support. Before we took him off of life support, Guru Maharaj called and gave him final instructions. In parentheses, it says, we held the phone to his ear. According to Guru Maharaj's instructions, we applied tilak to his head and body, tulsi leaves on his chest and in his mouth, Ganga Jal and water from other sacred rivers in his mouth, and sprinkled on his head the Sringa Kavacha, and sprinkled that on his head, the Sringa Kavacha on his head, dry tulsi sticks and dust on his chest, maha garlands from his Ishtadev Rukmini Dwarkadish and Rukmini Dwarkanath around his neck and body, and dust from Vrindavan on his chest and head. We chanted the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, the Sringa prayers, the Sringa Kavacha prayers, Govindam prayers, and Jai, Jai Radhe, Jai Krishna, Jai Vrindavan Bhajan. Surrounding him were Nirantara Prabhu, Jagadambika Mataji, and his family, including his brother and his brother's wife. In addition to that, Naikatma Prabhu instructed all the devotees that were available to come here into the temple room, and we also were simultaneously conducting a kirtan here in the temple room before the deities during that period from about 3 to 4 o'clock or a little bit beyond that, which is exactly, you know, the same time when this was happening. So it goes on to say, when they removed the ventilator, Prabhupada's chanting was playing in his ears, and we were all chanting japa loudly. Within a few minutes, he breathed from his mouth, and he opened his eyes as if to say Hare Krishna to us. And then, with one final breath from his mouth, he left his body on the auspicious day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day. He passed his final exam in such an auspicious and glorious way. Our Guru Maharaj has always said that the way one leaves his body determines his next destination. We are positive that he went back to Godhead. Although he is in a better place, we are left with the burden of suffering from his separation, and as he was the backbone of our family and the light in our lives. We are going to miss him dearly, and we will never be the same. While we deeply appreciate all the calls and messages, please forgive us for not being able to respond during this difficult time. Thank you again for your invaluable support and continued prayers. These are These are giving us the strength to keep going. Your servants, Vilavati Devi Dasi, Nihar and Janavi, Radha Mohini Devi Dasi, and Sri Goloka Das. So does anybody have any questions or anything they'd like to say? Satchitanoi.
Angari and Krishna,
yeah,
and the interaction they have about Duryodhana, protecting sometimes can become, you know, it bewilders how Krishna mystical acts in our lives. I've seen that sometimes when we had some difficulties, you know, in our movement, the desire of the devotees all together is that we want to become successful in something. Like, for example, you want to open food for life. I mean, food like in UCLA or in USC or whatever. And everybody would like that to happen. And it looks like a really good cause. And why shouldn't that happen? After all, you're thinking. And then we make prayers, and sometimes I send devotees go to the yagya and everything. But suddenly we see that it didn't happen. Right? So it might become bewildering. Krishna had maybe a different plan. Is it better? And then we were thinking, why shouldn't that happen? And then also, even when a family member is going through very difficult times, sometimes we also, you know, everybody would like him to have to our liking. We would like to see that person to get well, so he can carry on with his Krishna consciousness. And suddenly, it's the opposite. That person leaves, and. So it sometimes it may appear something that is already predestined. So my final point is that, can you explain something like that? It may appear to be that it's already predestined, that is something is going to be like this no matter what you do.
Well, back some weeks ago, there was a verse there, actually when Bhishma Dev, before he offered his prayers, I don't know if I could find it easily. Let's see. Just before he started offering his prayers, he made a couple. It was a few steps. Bhishma, this is his statement. He says, "Oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmins, God, and religion." And Prabhupada says here in the purport, he says, "As long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life." So that's it. Right there, that's the guideline, just to make sure that whatever we're doing is strictly following, we're guided by bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and we're strictly following religious principles, and whatever the, however trying the circumstances, we shouldn't be despondent, because underlying that is the philosophical point that Krishna is omnibenevolent. You know, his standard understanding of a supreme being is that he's omniscient, omnipotent, and the third one is omnibenevolent. So it's easy for people to understand how God is all-powerful and all-intelligent. Sometimes people have a tough time with that one. How could, you know, if you look around at the world today, because we're thinking in terms of, you know, benevolence in terms of things going well for us in this body, in this world. See? But that's not Krishna's way of thinking of benevolence. Krishna's way of, you know, vision on benevolence is getting us out of this, getting the soul out of this material world and taking us back home, back to Godhead. So in other words, Krishna is omnibenevolent. And whatever, you know, it's going to happen, it's especially for devotees, especially for people who, as mentioned here, are guided by bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas and strictly following religious principles, we should understand that whatever's going on in our life, it's for the good. You know, Krishna is omnibenevolent, He's involved in the lives of his devotees. It's superficially, it might appear like, it, you know, these. Well, it's a very trying circumstance of life, but ultimately, Krishna's hand is there. Krishna's present in that, and it's for our ultimate welfare. It's for our ultimate benefit that we're having to go through whatever we have to go through, because in the long run, it's meant for our purification and for accelerating the process of taking us back home, back to Godhead. Confirmed. I don't know where that was from. That's the best thing I could say about that. One other question here.
About Dwarkadish Prabhu, he had a center also in Ujjain, India, right? The same one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't know him from here, but he visited Milan, Italy, a couple of years ago when I was there. So I saw he was a very nice devotee, and he asked me to come to Ujjain to paint some murals on the wall of the temple there. And I agreed to do it, and he was so happy about that. He was so, I heard from other devotees that he was so enlivened by that someone was going to come and paint the temples paint the walls in that temple. But then I had other service. I got other service in Italy, so I couldn't do it, and I had to tell him that I declined. And then he was disappointed, and I didn't hear back from him again, but it was just a real nice devotee. I wish I would have had a chance to do that. Now, I still thought that after some service, I would still go and do that service for him because he was so enthusiastic about it. But no, now I can't. But
yeah, this is by no means a memorial service. I mean, it's so many things that should be said, but I mentioned it the other morning, but he was one of the major contributors for the gold leafing on the altar there, and I think he was also involved in actually arranging the different disciples of Bhakti Trimraj to come out and do it, and then he also bared a major portion of the expense for that, and Rabindranath could of course testify that he was one of his most steady and reliable pujaris for years. On Sunday, doing the Artik and festivals and like that. So I mean, there's so many wonderful services that he performed. Okay, so I guess we could end there. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Oh wait, somebody wants to say something. Go ahead.
I just have one thing that.
Speak into the microphone so everybody could hear you.
That Dwarkadish did, which I thought was just amazing. It was just so wonderful. When my mother left her body, she left her body here, and she was 100 years old. He told me a day or two later that he and his family had chanted an entire round of japa for her. I was just amazed because he didn't know her.
Yeah.
I'm not really that close to him.
Yeah, he was a sensitive person. I mean, I remember he kind of.
Yeah, he's very wonderful.
Thank you. One more person want to say something, Bhakta Avatar, and then they will wrap it up.
Every person that he would meet, he would say Hare Krishna to. And a lot of people would ask, because he'd have his bead bag on, so people would say, oh, what happened to your hand? And then he would explain to them what he was doing and talk about Krishna consciousness. And he would do that on a daily basis. So he, met a lot of people and preached to them.
Yeah. Actually, everybody knows Jai Chaitanya, right? Well, he was his kind of like Bhartma Pradakshina guru. He actually was a big inspiration for Jai Chaitanya coming into Krishna consciousness. He used to preach to him, and he actually, he encouraged him to go to the temple out in Placentia and then eventually and to come here as well. So he had played a big role in Jai Chaitanya's becoming a devotee. Hopefully we'll have an opportunity to kind of, do this in a proper way and talk more about him. Okay, so Grantrod Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.